Welcome to Off the Shelf, Festival of Words, brought to you by the University of Sheffield. In this episode, Dr. Sabine Little and her son, Toby, introduce Unfamiliar Space, their research project centred on communication in multilingual families.
We're here to talk about a co-authored paper, and I guess people will find it a bit unusual to have a child as a co-author on a paper. So do you want to tell people what our paper is called?
So it's called An Unfamiliar Space, Children and Parents as Collaborators in Autoethnographic Family Research.
So once people know the title, I guess it makes sense why parents and children, if they are collaborators on research, they should also be co-authors on the paper. But actually, the whole study was your idea. So what can we tell people about how this study came to pass?
This project started when I was 6, but it wouldn't have happened if I took 2 years off speaking German when I was 4, because I'd started school then. I was born in England, and I'm planning on living in England for most of my life. And then, so it started when I was 6, and after 2.5 years of collecting data, it finished when I was 9. And then we sent the paper off when I was 10, and after 2.5 years of reviewing it and improving it, it was published when I was 12.
Which actually means that by the time it was published, you had spent half your life on the study and that paper, which I think gives everybody thought about how long it takes for studies to come to fruition and what that means when you translate it to studies that involve children as well.
Yeah.
I research in the School of Education with multilingual families. So when you were 6, I was doing research with families and how children and parents were experiencing growing up multilingual. And at the time, when school had started, it was all a bit confusing learning to read in English and maintaining the German at home. So like so many families, the school start gap, as people call it, became, I guess, a hindrance, a barrier to you keeping the German going. And 2 years after the German sort of not died, but pretty much withered away in the family, we restarted. What was that like? Because I remember back that far, and I remember you thinking that you would just restart and your German would still be there like it was when you stopped speaking German, but it wasn't, was it?
I don't know. I kind of find it hard to remember back then. I think it wasn't really that different to me because I didn't really, well, I didn't speak German at school at all, because we didn't have German lessons and I didn't have any German friends or anything. So it was really just at home that kind of changed.
Yeah, I remember you saying to me when you were 6, just speak German altogether. And I did, and you went, what are you saying? I don't know what you're saying. I have no idea what you're saying. And I remember us both getting quite frustrated. For you, that was 7 years ago now, so more than half your life, I guess. And I suppose the study came out of that, your idea of let's do research about how the German comes back. And it might be worth saying a bit about how we did that research, what we actually did to keep track of how your German came back.
So whenever one of us was frustrated, or both of us at each other, one of us would decide that we would write down that conversation that we had. And then a few days later, we would go back to the conversation and talk about it and how we felt at that time and how we can just improve family life with less arguments.
I think that's really important, that even though the study was about bringing your German back, I guess what it became about was how to keep the family going in what was potentially a bit of a new situation. Might be worth saying that Daddy doesn't speak German as well. So we had to find completely new ways of being with each other. And I guess it wasn't just frustrations. It was also when you had a big successful moment. And I remember in our paper as well, we talk about how much you enjoyed playing with language. And I guess there's always a flip side that if you are successful at something, then it becomes a very positive experience and it stands out. And we talk about critical incidents in the paper. So we noted down things that felt important to us. And they might have been important because they were particularly frustrating, but also because they were particularly joyful or happy or successful. And I remember how proud you were at times when you came up with new words, because you would make up words combining German and English together. And when we talked about it, it was really important to let that stand as creativity and not say, well, that, as far as German is concerned, that was wrong. And I think you were more worried about getting the German correct, not making mistakes in standard German, than I was. I was quite happy about any German word that came out of your mouth, even if it was half English or whatever. But I think in your head, it was because you decided to speak German, in your head there was something there about speaking it properly, which I think to you meant standard German and without grammatical mistakes.
Yeah.
I suppose people would find it interesting to hear some examples. And I remember when you were really early on in our study, I was swinging you around in a bat costume in the garden. And I said, du bist eine Fledermaus, du kannst fliegen, which in English is you're a bat, you can fly. And you went, yeah. And then when you landed, you gave me a big, big cuddle and you said, du bist eine Kuschelmaus. You are a cuddle mouse. So you sort of stuck the two words together and you combined it with the verb for to cuddle, making up your own word. And people in Germany use the word Kuschelmaus, but you'd never heard it like that. So you kind of made up your own word. And that's just one example that I can think of. Can you think of another one?
Well, even now, we still use this one. Sometimes we say, ich starviere, which in English, that would be, I'm starving. And then in German, it would be, ich verhungere. And I kind of mix those two together.
What I find fun about it is that it gave you a completely new part of your identity, or it allowed you to express that part of your identity that was linked to playing with language and being playful with language. And being able to do that across both your languages, to me, was really quite special. And I remember that you said something like, when you can only do that with one language, you only come across as half of who you are.
Yeah.
And as somebody who researches identity in multilingualism, that was really important, because I hadn't said those words to you. That was something that came out in conversation. And to me, that made it obvious how important it is to talk to each other, not just in the language, but about the language as well. To me, it was really important to hear your side of how you were experiencing things. I remember really early on, there was one example where we were in the car and you had said that I should always speak German to you. And on the drive home, which takes us about half an hour, there were three different instances where you started a conversation. And the first one was about narcolepsy. Then one was about desert plants. And then at some point you came out with what is autism. And this was just in a half hour car ride. And I think many parents will be used to those kinds of questions. And I tried to do this in German and I thought, I can't. There is no way, after having just restarted the language, I can get all that meaning across to you. And I was really frustrated about this. So I asked to talk about it a couple of days later. And what I found really interesting was that you weren't frustrated at all. And you reassured me in that chat that we had. And you said something like, it's fine, don't worry. If we have to switch to English, that's okay. And the more German you know, the more German we can speak. And I found that really reassuring because I was trying so hard to do what you wanted. You know, you had said, I want to speak German all the time. So you were asking me in English, but I was trying to answer in German. And I was getting more and more frustrated. So it wasn't just you who was finding bits of it difficult. It was definitely me as well.
Yeah.
So how would we explain the unfamiliar space that is part of our journal article then? How would we explain to families about how they might go about talking with their children and working with their children on growing up multilingual?
It is about talking about the language as it is talking in the language. As a parent, you've said that it's important to make sure that you understand the child's point of view so that they can also feel happier and, I guess, safer in a family situation kind of thing.
I think safe is a really interesting word that you're using there. What do you mean by that?
I think I mean, like, comfortable around, and if you know that those people understand you, then you can relax a bit more, I guess, kind of thing.
Hmm. I remember when we wrote the paper, one of the things that you were saying is that it's, you can train for it, essentially. Because now, we didn't actually rehearse this, and I just asked you a question, what do you mean by that, live on air, and you were quite happy to jump in.
Yeah.
And in the paper, you talk about how with younger children, the 2 days difference, the 2 days separation from an incident occurring and the family talking about it is actually quite important to work out how you feel about stuff. Do you think that is particularly important for younger children or for, I'm trying to think about families who might not be used to talking to each other quite in the same way as we are. How can they start with that, I guess?
Well, so we did this study when I was younger, from 6 till 9. Back then, we decided that it would be better to leave space in between that situation that we wrote down, reflecting on it, because that gave me more time to think of what to say and exactly how I felt. Because I guess when you're younger, you're sometimes less sure of how you feel and what those emotions are. So there can be sometimes that that's the first time that you felt those.
I think it might be important to point out that in ethnography, there is a fairly old saying that the point of ethnography is to make the strange familiar and the familiar strange. So it's about looking at things that we take for granted and picking them apart and talking about them. And actually, the unfamiliar space, the name, came from us talking about this, because you had the idea for the study. And you said, when I asked you why you wanted to do the study, you said that you felt it would help you understand others from understanding your own life.
Yeah.
And actually, that again is one of the points of ethnography. And when I then told you about this idea of ethnography making the strange familiar and the familiar strange, you liked the play on words again, you with wordplay of familiar, and we were looking at our family. So we wanted to talk about a space that was both familiar and not familiar. So we called it the un/familiar space. So the space in a family where you kind of think you know everybody, but by creating the space to talk about it, you find out aspects that you didn't know. And I remember when we wrote the paper, you also said that there were aspects about you understanding me or your parents that were new and important as well, which I think people always find really interesting when we present this study at conferences. Because actually, I don't think we often listen to children and ask them how well they understand their parents, because we don't really think that that is a role that they should have. But I guess it helps when we're thinking about families working together and living together.
Yeah.
People might wonder about how we wrote the paper, because we wrote it when you were 10 years old originally. And then, as you say, we reviewed it for a long period of time. When we started writing the paper, we took 1 week of one of your holidays and actually met quite formally every day for about an hour to 90 minutes and talked about what you wanted in the paper. We went back over all our data and you decided what was most important. What I found interesting was that you were interested in writing a paper on how it all worked, what we call a methodological paper. You were less interested in writing a paper based on the language. You wanted to write a paper that would help researchers work with other children and other families on understanding and working with their children. You were less interested in just how good your German had become or what grammar development had taken place. And I found that really important, I guess. It was really important to me that both our voices went into this paper. So when we wrote it, you started us off with what you wanted in the paper, and then I wrote around what you had said by filling in the academic literature, the readings. I tied different things together. Then we met again and discussed it, and you fed more things in. And it was quite tricky because we had the data, which we presented as data and didn't change. But because the process of writing was so long, you edited your own words, just as anybody else does when they write journal articles, so that by the end of it, bits of it were in your voice as a 10-year-old and bits of it were in your voice as a 12-year-old. And I found that a really rewarding process.
Yeah, I mean, I think the study was really rewarding in as being a family. And I just hope that other people that read our paper can improve their family life. And that's mostly why I was more interested in the methods and less about the grammar.
I think that makes perfect sense.
While we were reviewing the paper, I said a few things that kind of pointed out the importance of the paper and how I thought about it. So I said, and I quote, "I think it's important for children to understand that parents are people too. Parents have thoughts, and often they don't tell the children their thoughts. So as a child, you sometimes get told something and you don't understand the thinking behind that. So talking about the thinking and the feeling helps both parents and children understand each other better." End quote.
Yeah, and I think for me, that was an absolute key part of the writing process, because I don't think in the study itself, we had even talked about how you perceived me as a parent. That came out of the writing process. So even though we had reflected throughout the study, how you had experienced that was almost like a meta-reflection, a reflection on the reflection that only happened as part of the writing process. So I guess if people are interested in emulating, doing what we did, they don't have to do a whole study, but to reflect not only on what goes on with the language, but also on how different members of the family experience the whole process is, I suppose, another level of getting to know each other better.
Yeah.
I suppose people might wonder whether it's just the two of us, but it isn't. We have, you have a dad, I have a husband, and he doesn't speak any German. And in the study, you actually recognised that as well, and you wanted to make sure that he was happy as well.
So he didn't really mind about this or didn't express it, but we did certainly ask him if he wanted to be included. He would be included because the paper isn't just about the language, it's also about this unfamiliar space and how it does improve family life and conversations and understanding each other better.
I think Daddy doesn't mind us speaking German. He had several good intentions over the years, including before you were born, to learn German, and never quite happened. And I think there came this mutual acceptance that it probably wouldn't happen, although I think he understands more than he thinks he does simply through our interactions with each other.
Yeah, since we've spoken German for quite a long time now, since I was six, he can probably understand most normal house things like Ich hab Hunger, I'm hungry, or Gute Nacht, good night. And those kind of registered to him because he's either worked out or we've told him what that means. And he's even gone on holiday with us to my grandparents' house. And there, he still enjoyed himself.
And I think every now and then we catch him laughing at something that we say to each other in German, or most recently, when we speak German to the cat. So he very obviously understands enough to be in on jokes or just everyday conversation. But I think you're absolutely right that it's important that nobody is feeling left out of the process. Because if they do, then to build one very special relationship at the expense of another wouldn't really fit with the whole concept of the unfamiliar space. I think your feeling of tying language to identity even predates the study, because I remember somebody asking you when you were 3 years old whether you feel more German or more English, which in my research is always a strange question because people can absolutely happily feel both and not being questioned about it. But I remember you saying that at that point when you were three that you felt more English, and when you were asked why, you said, because I can say Hoover, but I can't say Staubsauger, because Staubsauger, Hoover in German, was a much more difficult word. So even at that age, competence in the language was linked to your sense of identity. And I think that's something that I found in other research as well. We talk about self-efficacy, sort of your self-belief on how well you think you are doing and how confident you are in something.
I mean, now I certainly feel like I am both English and German. I feel like it's still a big part of who I am, my language, and how I see the world. And still in my head, I still make those word puns. So when I was younger, I thought of learning and knowing German as all like for fun. But now that I'm older, I see that there are opportunities that come with being multilingual, but I do still find it fun to know and still learn German.
So if we are trying to tell families or help families in creating their own unfamiliar space, what would be the points that we would want them to take away? What would be the things that we could suggest?
Well, our method that we've talked about with what we called in our paper critical incidents, which were the frustrations or something really important, that really helped us.
So drawing attention or encouraging people to pay attention to critical incidents, things that go particularly well or things that particularly frustrate people or where somebody might feel pride or joy or anything like that. That would be probably step one.
Yeah.
So pulling out those critical incidents and becoming aware of them.
But I think even doing that without your child's or your parents' collaboration, if you're doing it without that collaboration, then it's not really gonna work as well.
I think that's a really important point. So even before that, it's about deciding to work together.
Yeah.
So step one, decide to work together as a family.
Mm-hmm.
Step two, think about critical incidents, become aware of them.
Step three, you review those critical incidents by talking about them and working out how the other person felt and how that can improve your interactions.
And I think that's where space becomes important.
Yeah. That's why between every critical incident and the reviewing, we had a day or two, or depending on how, like if it was really frustrating, then maybe we'd even have three.
Just some time to work out how you feel and how you might want to talk about it.
Yeah. How to phrase how you feel.
And I guess step four is repeat step two and three forever.
Yeah. In the paper, I had something to say about this. I said, and I quote, "At the beginning, if you asked me why something made me grumpy, that would just make me more angry. But now I'm older and we're used to talking about how we feel. I think for younger children, it's better to wait a bit so they can think about what to say. It takes a little while to work out how you feel about stuff. So after you've thought about it, you can talk about it and it gives you their perspective and then you can work it out together." End quote.
I think that's really important. So even though you repeat steps two and three, the time it takes between them might truncate. I think it's fair to say that these days when one of us gets upset or angry, it's as you say, we're quite happy to just throw questions at each other like, "Are you okay?" And I think it has changed how we talk about emotions and how we feel in the family.
Thank you for listening. We'll be publishing content throughout the festival. For more information, visit www.offtheshelf.org.uk. Find us on Twitter at OTS Festival and at facebook.com/offtheshelf.